morning, people. What's happening? Pete Davidson here with another edition of the Rotobahn podcast, recording at about 10:40 on a Wednesday morning up in the Rotobahn crow's nest. The air conditioner's off. So this is not going to be a long podcast because it's going to get freaking hot in here. But hated fading that song on the way in. Tammy Terrell is one of my favorites. The reason I chose that song, Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing, is because I finally had like a real draft. And it's amazing, you know, how it really clarifies things. I mean, it really, really does. I came at some decision points and I did a couple things that surprised really even myself, to tell you the truth. I'm an instinctive drafter. I have ideas. I have rankings. I go in. And as a draft unfolds, I get ideas. What can I tell you? This team sort of built itself as the draft went on because some players got to me I didn't expect to get to me. And I don't know. It's just I'm pretty happy with the way things worked out. But it wasn't exactly the plan going in. Although my quarterbacks were sort of the plan. I'll get to that. First thing I'm going to do here is just sort of walk through the first round. And for anybody who doesn't know what I'm talking about, I have linked this draft on the Rotobahn site. So if you are listening to the podcast on one of the platforms, you can't see the draft board, go to rotobahn.com. Look at the new podcast, and you will see I've posted this picture of the draft board underneath the pod. That way, you can take a look at the board, see what everybody did. I'm going to go through my team, but obviously this is not a 10-hour podcast. I'm not going to go through all 12. But we are going to go through the first round here just because I think it's interesting. This is a draft with a lot of really sharp drafters, so, you know, It's a pretty good look at, you know, what some smart people are doing. Kevin, the fantasy football engineer, runs this league. Pat Thorman's in it. Jimmy Hackett's in it. Pete Orvizet, Joey Pigskins, Leo Pasiga, Doug Eddy. A lot of really, you know, just bright people. Kevin Cotillo. I think when you get a lot of sharps together, it's good to see what they do. So, McCaffrey, this is a full PPR league. So McCaffrey went number one. That doesn't faze me one bit. I sort of flip a coin at the top right now between Barkley and McCaffrey. Elliott would be in the discussion if he was there. Kamara doesn't go to the top spot for me, but he's just right, just a tick behind. So McCaffrey went one to Joey. And Barkley went two to Pete Overzet. And Nick took Kamara third. Kevin Cotillo took David Johnson fourth. Pat Thorman did the first sort of big thing in the draft by taking Elliott five overall. Gutsy move by Pat. I like it. Hackett took Davante Adams. Hopkins goes, what, seventh? Julio Jones, 8. Michael Thomas goes to Mike Margosian at 9. And then at 10, I think I had the first shocking pick of the day. I took Nick Chubb, which if you look at the new rankings that are going to be uploaded later today, by the time this pod is up, they may be already up, but they'll definitely be up later today. You will find Nick Chubb much higher on my board. Now, part of that is due to the Duke Johnson thing. But really just part of it. The reason I moved him up is the more I looked at Nick Chubb, the more I said, why is this guy being drafted where he's being drafted? So, I moved him up to 6 overall on the board, just so you know. But I'm not advocating necessarily drafting him there. But then again, I'm not advocating that you shouldn't draft him there. I think he's a reasonable choice. The thing about Chubb is, because he's slipping into the mid to late second round fairly frequently, there is an argument to be made that tactically you're better off seeing if you can steal him in the second. The thing is, the second round talent drop off is not much. So I don't know if you necessarily steal him, you know, getting a player at 9 versus 14, 15 is really not that different because the drop-off is negligible. So it's really just a question of flavors in that area. There's not a big material difference in terms of projections. These guys are all elite talents. So even though Beckham Jr. is the guy I've been focused on, I passed on him, took Chubb. And just to sort of underscore my point, I got Beckham anyway. He came back around to me with the third pick of the second round. So after Chubb, Juju Smith-Schuster went, and then Leo, with the wraparound, did a pretty ballsy thing. He took Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. So oddly enough, Leo and I have Chubb and Beckham. He's got Hill and Kelce. Neither one of us got the quarterbacks, I think, that we maybe thought we might get. Although I'll get into that a little later. So that's how the first round went. Just to wrap up the second, Bell went, after Leo went Hill Kelce on the wraparound, Mixon goes, then I take Beckham, then Le'Veon Bell, then James Conner, then Todd Gurley, who goes middle of the second round in this draft, to Doug Eddy. And Hackett took Evans, so he has Adams and Evans. That's a nice start. Pat took Dalvin Cook. So his first three running backs are Elliott, Cook, and Kerryon. That's crazy if those guys work out. Let me see. What do we got? Melvin Gordon, actually, after Dalvin. So Zeke and Melvin both going fairly early. Zeke almost at his natural spot. And Melvin probably, I don't know, 10 or so picks later than he would normally go. Keenan Allen with the 21st pick. 22nd pick. George Kittle with the 23rd. And last pick of the second round, Antonio Brown. So, pretty standard fare. Nothing really shocking in there. No picks that I would really sort of single out as being bad or anything like that. And now we're just going to go through my team. And again, this is going to be a quick podcast, folks. This is just something I felt like doing. And actually, while I'm on the topic, I just want to say thanks for getting back into the swing on this podcast. My first pod didn't get a lot of listeners, and I was wondering, I'm like, wow, people don't care anymore. This sucks. But it looks like our audience is coming back now that we've got all the platforms up, and the listener rate's up over 1,000% from the first episode. So I just want to thank you guys for coming back. And now, as far as my team goes, to me, it's very interesting, but I mean, let's face it, our own teams are always very interesting to us, right? But Chubb Beckham was a start I really liked. In the third round, now Thielen goes right ahead of me. I was thinking about taking Thielen if he got to me, but I actually assumed the guy I ended up getting wouldn't get to me, and he did, is Damian Williams. I snatched him up without any hesitation. I just feel too good about that offense. To get a core piece of Kansas City's offense, to me, was too good to pass up. And I did protect my investment by adding Darwin Thompson later in the draft. I feel really good about that. You know, you never know if things are going to work out in fantasy football, but, you know, to get the receiving backs off that team was good. I really liked that. And then I come back around with a third running back on my fourth pick. I took Josh Jacobs, who I've got going, you know, mid to late third, and to get him in the fourth was nice. And, you know, as a third back, I didn't feel like the risk factors were that big of a deal. The reason I like Jacobs is he catches passes. I know a lot of people think that he may sort of lose the third down gig to Jalen Richard, but I think the way I look at it, it's probably easier for them to supplement, or if not easier, the same, to supplement with Martin on early downs is to supplement with Richard on later downs. Richard's had fumble issues. I don't think he's anything special. So to me, Jacobs could eat sort of all over. He could get a rest early. He could get a rest in passing situations. They could end up mixing it up. So to me, I'm just sort of buying the touches and the skill set and being happy with it in the fourth round. If he doesn't play well and he loses time, you know, probably he ends up with more like a fifth or sixth round value as a committee back. That's not that far off what I paid, so I can live with it. This is after the elites are off the board for me, so I'm willing to take a little chance here. The interesting thing with the Jacobs pick is normally in that spot I would go after O.J. Howard, and I really did think about it. I don't know. My feel for The Room was that the tight ends weren't going to jump that fast in this format. And I was right. I ended up getting Howard in the fifth. And again, I do tend to draft instinctually, and it could have absolutely blown up in my face. I don't want to make it sound like, you know, this was some kind of genius move. It was a calculated risk, and it worked out. But yeah, I love O.J. Howard as a fifth-round pick. Curtis Samuel, I stayed on brand with my sixth-round pick. I'm a big fan of Samuel in that offense. I just feel like both Moore, who had already been taken, DJ Moore went second to last pick of the fourth round. So, you know, I just feel like when you look at Samuel and, sorry, semi lost my train of thought there. When you look at Samuel and Moore, I just feel like so much of that offense is going to go through those two players. You know, once the calf isn't, excuse me, once the touch, it's, you know, once it doesn't go to Cam or CMC, most of them are going to go to these two guys. So, and they're so explosive, particularly Samuel. He's just so underrated in terms of how explosive he is. After that, my next pick was a little bit, I'm not going to say it was a reach, but I thought long and hard on this one. I didn't have a really comfortable place that I wanted to go, and I decided to just sort of go with the upside of Rashad Penny, even though I think, you know, I think Chris Carson's underrated, and I think he's a player who could sort of burn me on this. He's also a guy who's never had major volume. He's been dinged up. If he goes down, I think Penny could be a monster. So I just kept taking backs there. Now, it's my next pick that really sort of blew up the room a little bit. So I'm coming up, and it's the eighth round after, you know, right after I took Penny. I was actually sort of hoping D.D. Westbrook might come around the turn, but if not, I was going to consider taking my quarterback there, and Westbrook didn't make it. So I'm looking at quarterbacks, and my plan going into the draft was I really wanted to try to get running quarterbacks. And at this point, Deshaun Watson was off the board, Pat Mahomes was off the board, and really I had anybody I wanted. Luck, I'm just not that into Luck this year, as I've mentioned to a lot of people. Now, obviously, you've got that leg thing, which makes him an easier fade. But, you know, I'm just concerned that that team could be pretty good and could play a lot of conservative football this year. They did that last year at times. You know, I think Luck, if he can get 100%, could win the MVP this year, but not necessarily be a great fantasy quarterback. Rodgers, the other guy who I really should be looking at in this spot, you know, look, I love Aaron Rodgers. I've already got him as leading a couple of my teams. I'm just not sure that his upside this season is as high as it could be, given that his weapons are just okay. And he's moving into a new offense, and I'm not sure what that's going to do to his statistics. So, you know, obviously Rodgers would be a good pick, but, I just had a different mode of operation in my mind when I came in. And I think some of you probably know what I did before I even tell you. but even though there had only been two quarterbacks off the board, even though I might have been able to wait for him to come back around for me, I took Kyler Murray as the third quarterback taken. But I think the thing I want to emphasize here is that, you know, I don't see a lot of separation between these quarterbacks, the QB1s, even a lot of the QB2s. There's so many good quarterbacks this year. I was looking for a style of player as much as I was a particular player. I was looking for, I mean, I'm looking for quarterbacks who, you know, you call it the cheat code, call it whatever you want, but I'm looking for guys who can put up monster points with their feet and with their arm. And my goal at quarterback wasn't to be the last person to take one. My goal at quarterback wasn't, you know, to wait the room out and get great value at the position or anything like that. My idea was make sure I put together the core of my team first. So for me, it was about waiting to the eighth round. It wasn't about waiting till X number of quarterbacks are off the board. Because my idea about buying a quarterback has to do with what I'm passing up at other positions versus have enough quarterbacks been taken yet, if you follow my reasoning. At least that's how I think about these things. So I took Kyler Murray, and I feel pretty good about it. Rodgers and Luck went bam, bam right after. And then, I mean, just look at some of the players who went in this round. Dante Moncrief, James Washington, Larry Fitzgerald, Austin Eckler, Ronald Jones, DeSean Jackson. I mean, there's no way I'm taking any of those guys over Murray. So, you know, I definitely feel like the time of me going for a quarterback, I think I did it right. You know, we'll have to just sort of look at how this plays out as to whether going early for Murray was the way to go. You know, you can make the argument that, you know, he'd have been there the next time around. Here's the thing. If I don't take Murray, I'm either taking Duke Johnson or Westbrook. And, you know, well, obviously Westbrook had already been taken, as I said. So I'm sitting there going, do I take Duke Johnson yet? And I just kept thinking about it. I'm like, you know what? I don't need Duke Johnson. I've got four running backs. I think he's a really good value. But I just took Murray. And then I ended up getting Duke Johnson 20 picks later anyway. So if I had waited another round and I had taken Duke Johnson because, air quote, don't want to take a quarterback this early or don't want to reach for my quarterback, just some reason that doesn't really hold any value to me, I would have ended up getting Duke Johnson, paying around earlier, maybe losing my quarterback and having to go a different way, and I would have gained nothing. So I'm glad I did what I did. I took Johnson coming back around. And then in the 10th round, here's where I think I actually sort of, I don't think I shook the room up so much as I think the room thought that I really screwed the pooch. And maybe I did. We'll see how this works out. But again, my philosophy going into this draft was I really wanted to have, again, call them what you want, cheat code, Konami QBs, whatever you want to call them. But I wanted the dual threat quarterback who can give me those rushing statistics in addition to the passing statistics. And, you know, Lamar Jackson was still on the board. So I took a second quarterback very early, which is something I don't ever do. But the philosophy was quite simply, one of these quarterbacks in my mind has a chance to be something very special for fantasy this year. Why not just get both of them, be able to play matchups? Quarterbacks inherently, when they are running quarterbacks, they do get hurt. We've seen it many times in the past. So I just thought, you know what? Let's double up on the philosophy, get my backup quarterback here, get it done with, have the two best running quarterbacks in the league, and now I'm covered. If something happens to Kyler, I can go to Lamar. If Lamar is going crazy and outpointing Kyler, I can always start him. I really like the options this gives me, and I think it gives my team a unique element. Now, what have I done bad so far? What I've done bad is that I really don't have enough receivers in a full PPR league. So I do get serious going forward at that position. Now, the question is, did I do enough? And I'll be honest, I'm really not sure. I think my wide receivers are going to really tell the story for how far my team can go. Now, look, I've got Beckham and Samuel. I'm cool with that. But I'm going to need a third and often fourth receiver in this league. I mean, you don't have to start three. This is a triple flex format. So I will be starting an extra back or two, but I will need that third receiver and sometimes fourth, depending on buys. So Beckham, Samuel, and a bunch of running backs, tight end, two quarterbacks before I really got serious about the rest of my receiving group. So coming back around in the 11th round, I took Anthony Miller. Love the player. Not sure if he's going to get enough targets. So I'm not happy yet. I feel like I got a nice player here, but you know, not sure if it's going to work for this season or not. And then in the 12th round, I felt it, you know, I had waited long enough. I felt like if I waited to the 13th, I might not get him, even though I think I probably would have, but I'm thinking I might not. So why take the chance? I took Darwin Thompson. And it's funny, sometimes, I mean, the second I did it, I felt really good about it. Not because I got a good value. I know I didn't get a good value. But knowing that if Williams gets hurt or, you know, whatever, or concussed or suspended or whatever the heck might happen, or if he just, you know, plays bad, Darwin Thompson should be the replacement. He might not get a lot of early down work because of Carlos Hyde, but in this offense, if you give a guy like Darwin Thompson, say, 12 touches, he's going to be worth quite a bit. So I feel really good about having Williams and Thompson. It definitely cost me a player. There's no doubt about it. You know, Crowder, Trey Quinn, they both went before my next pick. Jordan Reed went. He was a guy I was looking at. So, I mean, it could have been worse. The run wasn't that bad, and a couple receivers went who I didn't really even want. So, like Sanu and Quincy and Nunwa. I don't like those guys in this format. And I was able to get Albert Wilson with my next pick, which I was happy about. Then I added Hollywood Brown, which I was definitely happy about. Rashard Higgins, Hakeem Butler, which gives me a little hookup with one of my quarterbacks. Deontay Johnson, who I think is a great sleeper from the Steelers. And Jalen Hurd was my last pick from the 49ers. So that's all 18 of my picks. And you can see the second round of my draft, for the most part, is receivers. The second round, of my, the second half of my draft was Duke Johnson, Lamar Jackson, Anthony Miller, Darwin Thompson, Albert Wilson, Hollywood Brown, Rashard Higgins, Butler, Deontay, and Hurd. So lots of receivers. And it's really typical Rotobond draft strategy down the stretch. What I'm looking to do, I mean, were there safer players I could have taken with a lot of those receivers? Definitely. I could have taken guys who I know will do something. But I have no interest in those players. I'm looking for guys who are going to, you know, explode a little bit. I think Albert Wilson, I don't think it's likely, but I think he has the athletic potential. You know, Marquise Brown, I'm worried about his foot. But if the foot heals up well, he could be something special. Rashard Higgins gives me a little bit of a, you know, if Odell Beckham misses a game, I've got a guy who'll get some targets. I also think he's underrated in general. Hakeem Butler, probably not going to work out. But if he does work out, he could be a huge monster red zone threat hookup with my quarterback. Deontay Johnson, the logic for taking him is that his upside is extreme. You guys know, if you've been listening to the Rotobond pod a long time and reading Rotobond, I'm just not a big believer in Dante Moncrief outside of him being a big play guy. And, you know, James Washington could break out. I like James Washington quite a bit. But Deontay Johnson is a genuine big play threat. And I was really impressed with him as a smaller receiver, not a tiny receiver, but a smaller receiver who can really get off the line of scrimmage against press. And I think that, you know, if teams are solo pressing Deontay Johnson and he's getting a lot of snaps, he can make a lot of big plays. So what he is he's a pick where I get to look at him week one, week two maybe, and decide, hey, is this guy getting a look? And if he's not, he's a cut where I move on to a different guy. Same kind of thing with Jalen Hurd. You know, is he going to be a rookie sensation? You know, probably not, but he's the kind of guy who could be, right? You know, he could get goal line carries. He can, you know, he can play slot. He can play tight end. He can play outside. If Marquise Goodwin becomes de-emphasized or cut or something like that, for all we know, Hurd could end up being a primary weapon on this team. So Hurd is there just in case they decide to use him quite a bit. But most likely, a lot of these guys are going to be first waiver wire cut players. You know, that's what they'll probably end up being. They're swipes at upside. That's what they are. So overall, I'm pretty happy with this draft. You know, check it out on the site. Like I said, I posted the picture of the draft board. It's sort of cool. You can see the handwriting on some of these on the right ends. but it was a fun draft, and it crystallized the way I think about some of these players. You know, particularly, I think, Kyler Murray. When it came right down to it, and, you know, I thought about waiting. I just didn't have it in me to wait. I wanted the player on my fantasy team, and I was willing to pass up on some pretty good stuff to get it. Now, in this draft, I knew there were people in there who might take him. In the drafts you guys are going to be in, you know, it's up to you to read the room. You know, the move on Kyler Murray is probably to wait a little bit longer. But if you've got a bunch of sharks in your league, and it's a player you really want, if you're trying to play it like me, where you really want to go with the running quarterback, you know, I don't think taking him in the eighth round is a problem at all, even if you're taking him ahead of some higher-ranked guys. You know, if you're like me and, you know, this is something you want to get involved with. And not everybody, you know, it's not a play for everybody. Playing it safe, waiting a little longer, and taking Jared Goff in round 12, like Pete Overzet did, is a perfectly reasonable way to play it, a smart way to play it, in my opinion. Philip Rivers went in the 18th round in this draft. That's good business. That's a smart way to play it. So the quarterback position this year is really a position. The only way you're going to lose is if you reach really bad early. Like if I had taken Kyler Murray instead of O.J. Howard, I think that would have been a really dumb thing to do. Where I did it, I can live with it. So let's just move on to a couple little points we're going to hit before we wrap this podcast up. I think we'll have this thing done inside of 35 minutes. One thing I do sort of just want to get into for a second, and if you saw my timeline this morning, you may have already seen this, but I think when we're talking about injuries, we need to be responsible with the information we put out, especially when it's generalized information. So Kenyon Drake's in a walking boot, and we don't know exactly how serious it's going to be. It may be something that keeps him out during the season. It might be something where he's back for the season. We don't know yet. But someone on my timeline, just, you know, who's got a lot of followers, put something out that said basically, you know, walking boot equals a bad injury, that it's never minor. And that's just not true. So I just think we should always be careful about saying things like that, because, you know, for people who, you know, follow you, they may take that information and run with it and just fade full, like all guys in walking boots. And, you know, it's really better if you treat them on a case-by-case situation. So, you know, let's be careful about stating opinions as fact, especially when we're getting into a medical area where we're clearly non-experts. I think it's important for analysts to remember to do that. And it's important for people who are, you know, scooping up this information to, you know, when you're getting medical information from someone who's not a doctor, there should be some natural skepticism. Just wanted to get that out there. Let's get back to this draft. And I just, before we shut down this pod again, this is a quick pod just going over this draft that I went through over the weekend. This thing will end up, I hope, being under 40 minutes, hopefully well under 40 minutes. But just a couple guys that you can see on the board here that sort of caught my attention. There's probably 40 guys we could get into here, but just a few here. I thought Tyler Boyd in the fourth. To me, it was a little bit of a reach, but fantasy engineer Kevin was the one who did it, and he's a pretty smart owner, so it's something to sort of take a look at. I've got Boyd in the fifth, so I'm not very far off of that, but that's the earliest I've seen Boyd go all year, so I thought that was interesting. Josh Gordon in the 12th for Pat Thorman. That was an attention getter. That's the earliest I've seen Gordon go. I wonder if Pat has a little inside info there, but I like picking Gordon. I haven't gone for him that early yet. TJ Hockenson also in the 12th round. I sort of like that pick. I was bummed out that he didn't make it to me, but I think Hockenson is definitely a guy you can go after in that area. And Keel Harry in the 9th. Pete Overzet pulled that one. I wasn't a big fan of that pick. I think Harry could have waited a little bit more. But in fairness, the wide receivers were going fast. Personally, I'm not willing to go that high on him. Although Pete really made up for it in the 11th with a Matt Breida selection. I thought that was a freaking steal. Chris Herndon's a guy that I think is worth discussing just because a lot of people are saying he's undraftable because he's going to be out for the first four in a suspension. I'm going to go the other way on that. I think he definitely is less valuable. You're not going to be able to play him 4 weeks, that's for sure. But if you're drafting him as your tight end two, and if your tight end one has a bye week that's after his return date, I don't know. It seems like a pretty good add to me. And in this case, Doug Eddy picked him up as his tight end two in the 15th round. I like the value. So I think, you know, that's something to think about. Maybe not a full fade on Herndon, just a fade into the mid to deeper tight end two area. You can grab him as a high-end backup, and for all you know, he can end up becoming your starter at some point. Let me see. Anybody else here? You know what? I thought Leo Pasiga made some pretty good value picks in this draft. He also went early on some guys, sort of a mix around of that. But one guy I definitely liked of his was D.D. Westbrook starting off the 8th round. I thought that was a good, solid pick. I don't care about ADP. That might not look like a value in terms of ADP. But in this league, full PPR, I really liked that pick. I thought that was good business. And then here's one that I think is interesting for a lot of my listeners, because I know there's a lot of New Englanders in my audience. But this is compelling in that this is a Boston area league. It's called the Beantown Brawl. Now, some of us aren't Boston area guys, but I'd say out of the 12 teams, 8 of them are. And Tom Brady went in the 17th round. It's pretty late. So, you know, even Boston area folks are wising up in terms of Brady's fantasy value. And I think the important thing to understand here, you know, if you're a Patriots fan or whatever, it's not that we're saying Tom Brady isn't going to play well this year. I think there's some nervousness in terms of his age, and you never know when it's going to start to get bad. But I think what this this selection really says is that people see the Patriots as running more. being more defensively oriented, and maybe going back to that Patriot paradigm that won championships in the early part of the run. You know, so do what you want with Brady, take him where you want, but, you know, I thought this was interesting. So that's going to do it for this draft. I just wanted to just do a little chat about an actual live draft with some smart drafters that I just did. We will have a rankings update on Rotobahn coming out later today. On Friday this week, I'm going to have the great Sigmund Bloom on the pod. So it's just a couple days away. We'll talk about the goings-on this week and hopefully give you guys a couple good nuggets you can use in your Friday night, Saturday night drafts. So I'm definitely looking forward to hanging out and chatting with Sig because he always has a lot of good information, and he's just generally a fun guy. So that's pretty much going to do it for this edition of the Rotobomb podcast, just a short one, which is good after after the long-ass, long-winded auction thing that I posted the other day. And some of you obviously enjoyed that. I've been getting good feedback. So hopefully this was good information as well. And we'll be seeing you on Friday when I chat with Sigmund Bloom. Jim Hackett and I will be live Sunday morning. My content on EEI should start going up in the next couple days. So things are going to really, really start heating up now. Now we're into it. It's drafting season. The Rotobahn 500 probably is going to be getting either daily updates or every other day updates going forward up until the drafting season slows down. And it's exciting time, man. This is my favorite time of year. I think probably for a lot of you guys it's the same. Anyway, see you guys Friday. Thanks for listening to the Rotobahn Pod.
If you ever need a helping hand.